everybody, and welcome back to Trinity's Podcast, What's the Point? I am here today. Oh, my name's Katie O'Connell, and I'm here today with
Heather Day,
Tom Wolaska,
and
Lidice Montoya.
Yay! Yay! Today, we're going to be talking about Heather and Lidice's trip to San Diego. It's Border Mission. Mm-hmm. But first, I want to ask you guys, I want to make a disclaimer first. If the room is really echoey, we're in a different spot and it's all brick. So
it's
bear
fine.
With us.
It's fine. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. But other than that, I want to ask you guys first, what is like your favorite mission trip experience or something that you've done on a mission trip that you really liked or something that you've learned?
You say that like we're expected to have multiple mission trip experiences.
Hey, if you only have one, that's fine. Right.
Okay, I'll go first. I have been on one mission trip, not when I was a kid. I never had an experience with that as a kid. Mm-hmm. But when I was a young adult, when I want to say Herschel and I had been married about a year, we were probably 23. We were chaperones for a high school mission trip with our church in Appleton. And we went to Northern Arkansas and did a youth works trip.
Oh, yeah.
And it was mostly really good. What sticks most in my memory is that we were 23 and probably not old enough to be chaperones on that trip. That's think about all the fair. Really irresponsible things uh-huh. that we did.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we had a ton of fun. And the great thing is that the kids that we went with at the time felt like we were adults and they were kids, but we were really like 5 years apart in oh, yeah. age. And so we kept in touch with them. And, you know, as we have moved to different places, we've kept in touch with a bunch of those kids. And like, fun. We got to go to their weddings. And, you know, Herschel and I even sang in one of their weddings. And Herschel sang in a couple of them, I think. But so it was really cool to like have these very cool bonding experiences with the kids who were, you know, in our 15-passenger van
yeah.
When we were maybe not driving responsibly. anyway, but life. I'd also got to go to the old St. Louis Cardinals baseball stadium when we were driving there. So that was fun.
Nice.
Anyway, that was my one and only mission trip experience.
That's so fun.
I've never been on a mission trip.
Really?
Ever.
Wow.
Nope.
So let me ask this. If you had to go on one, where would you want to go? What would you want to do?
Or got to go on one.
Or yeah, if you got to go on one.
Well, let me preface this by saying that I not in my grandfather's congregation, but in the congregation after, they had their own camp. So
okay. We
always, like, we would go to camp. So that was the thing we did, church camp. Mission trips, per se, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
If I got to go anywhere, I would want to go somewhere different than my normal everyday experience. But the biggest thing that I've learned is that I'd rather go on a mission trip where I don't have to do stuff, but where I can be in relationship with people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that learning really came in seminary and in in undergrad, seminary in particular, because I did a, back in my day, we had to do a cross-cultural experience
mm-hmm.
For 2 weeks. And I was lazy, and I was like, I'm going to do something in the Twin Cities. And so I got to go to St. Paul's Swedish Evangelical Lutheran Church, which sounds like perhaps the most Scandinavian thing in the entire world.
That does not sound cross-cultural.
Amazing, honestly.
It is now a Spanish-speaking congregation.
Good.
Wow. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yep. A clergy couple are there, and they have their vibrant service with attendees are Spanish-speaking, and then they have an old guard of 10 people that come for the English-based worship service.
Wow.
But it was all about being a part of the neighborhood, and St. Paul's needed to transform itself. It's on just off of Lake Street in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. so it was, we are a Spanish-speaking congregation. And that came naturally, and that's who they are, and it was a great experience. just to learn and be welcomed into the community for a couple of weeks. So that was more impacting me and being in an accompaniment model, which is a whole other podcast. But I didn't have to go and do anything. Mm-hmm. I just got to be a member of the congregation, which made an impact on me. Less what I had to give in this paternalistic sort of relationship. Mm-hmm. The end.
That's really cool. Fun. Do you want to go or do you want me to go? Lead us in.
You can go.
Okay. So I have been on a few. I went on three. I went to New Orleans. I went to Phoenix City, Alabama on a Habitat for Humanity trip, which was really cool. And then we went to Pine Ridge Reservation out in South Dakota, and that was awesome. And then I also, when I worked in Bloomer, I led one in Colorado. And that was, I relate to you, Heather, because like I was a couple years older than 23. I think I was 25, 26, somewhere in there, like maybe freshly at 26. And it was me and there were two other adults. There was a dad and a grandma and then nine high school kids. And it was absolutely insane. And all I could think about the whole time is how the heck am I old enough right now to actually be leading this when like, right. I'm like, I am the youngest chaperone that there is, but here I am like making all the travel plans and, you know, making sure that we're all getting where we need to be on time. And it was insane.
It's a weird thing.
It is. But I also relate with what you were saying, Tom, because, I'm also going to include in here the youth gatherings. Mm. I went to the 2009 youth gathering in New Orleans, and there's always like a service day of sorts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were so many groups that were out like doing physical work and, you know, like outside all day. And my church, our service day consisted of us going to the National World War II Museum. Yep. Going, like, looking around, like, taking ourselves on a tour. But then they had World War II veterans there that we got to talk to afterwards. And that was our service, like, doing that,
cool,
building those relationships. I have loved all of them for very different reasons. There's so many parts that stick out in my head for each of these trips, both building the relationships, but then also doing the work and being weird and young and driving way too fast, you know, all that stuff. I know. It's fine. But yeah, I don't know that I have like necessarily a favorite one. All of them were really cool. All of them for very different reasons, but I definitely... What are you doing?
Lita says being weird with her microphone.
Anyway, yeah, all of them were really great, and I loved different pieces of all of them. So, Lita, say, what is your experience with mission trips?
So the only one I had is the one in San Diego.
Yeah,
and but I being like in the other side of the trips, like I'm being the one who's visited when I was back in El Salvador, and it's a very different experience. When I hear your stories, and like, it's like, okay, your perspective is, mm-hmm, totally different compared to being the one who is the mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did
you have good I mean, I'm sure we could do like a whole episode on this, but like, was it a good experience for you to have?
Yeah, people visiting El Salvador back in the time, it was for us like there is hope, you know, and these people is coming, and there is hope for us for a better community, better world or whatever. And the people visiting, you guys are usually very nice and very cool and very playful and very welcoming and very inclusive. However, after being here for a couple years, then you can see how that changed when the same people are in their own countries, how they see you differently. And it's a shock. Yeah. We will need another podcast to talk about that.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
So people aren't as welcoming as they put on.
No. Mm-hmm. No. And I'm not going to be like nice saying something different. It is not.
Yeah.
The attitude. Not everybody, obviously. There are people that their personality is that way, you know, and so they're the same there and here. But there are people who change. They change when it comes to terms of where they are and you know, so many things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wow.
That is interesting. That is very interesting. And maybe we will have to do another episode on that some other time. But today we're going to let Heather and Lita say do a lot of the talking because this summer they went on a trip to San Diego, and it was a border mission trip, and they were in Pastor Patrick had a sermon probably a month or so ago now.
Mid-September. We did the sermon.
And they were featured in that, but I know that they have a ton more stories. So, wherever you guys want to start.
You want me to start or you want to start?
Either way.
I'll just start talking and then you can jump in.
Okay.
So first of all, it wasn't just Lita Say and I that went, like we were with a small group. So, we ended up in San Diego and correct me if I'm wrong, Lita Say, but it ended up that way because you were looking for a trip as an extension of the anti-racism classes that you did last year to kind of dig in a little bit deeper.
Yes.
And you were looking for somewhere that we could go with churches that were working with immigrants crossing the border on the southern border with Mexico.
Yes.
And through kind of reaching out to different places, you ended up being in contact with St. Andrew's in San Diego with Pastor Manuel Retamosa.
Manuel Retamosa, yes.
Who is wonderful. Yes. And
he's in the band, right? For the youth gathering, right?
He's like on the team that does the like...
And the extravaganzas.
Like the planning team for like the state, like the main state.
Okay. And he is also Vance Black Fox cousin or brother.
Yeah.
He is very involved in the native liturgy that the church-wide, the ERCA has
why I know that
put
name.
Together.
Okay. Yeah, that we're going to be doing on November
19th.
The service of the peoples.
Yes, service of the peoples.
With a lunch after, please sign up at Clipboard Central or online.
Yep.
Yes.
Nice plug for that.
Deacon Lita Say, we're going to have pupusas.
Pupusas, hopefully tacos, piñatas for sure. We will play lotería. This is the most important. The Trinity Congregation, we have the opportunity to have relationships or to connect with the Hispanic neighbors.
Like neighbor to neighbor?
Trinity neighbor with the Hispanic neighbor. Yes, we've been waiting for this opportunity, right? Because it's what Trinity Congregation wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
It's really fun. Everybody should come.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Heather.
No, that's okay. Okay, so with Pastor Manuel Retamosa, and he was kind of our guide for the week.
Yes.
And he was his... I'll dwell on him for just a minute because I didn't expect this from the trip. This was one of the kind of surprises from the trip for me, was how much he wove his story and his family story into the whole week. Yes. And that was just a huge bonus of the week because I did not expect that at all. But he is, his mom's side is Native American. So he is enrolled Cherokee, I believe. Yeah. And then his dad's side is... from Mexico Tijuana. And lived in, his extended family's in Tijuana, but they were all up and down California. Mm-hmm. And so as he was kind of talking about San Diego and Tijuana and the whole immigration experience, he was really able to talk about his own family's experience and how, because this one aunt got, you know, had a chance mm-hmm. to go to this place in Northern California, then this happened and this happened and this happened. And because of that, he could go to college. And because of that, he's a pastor. And it was just this really, really interesting way of seeing an immigration experience, quote unquote, immigration mm-hmm. experience, mm-hmm. because, you know, they were, you know, he talks about how, you know, we were in California before it was the United States, when it was Mexico. So,
I think that those places like San Diego and Tijuana, the border kind of diffuses, you know, talking about, okay, who was first here? Mm-hmm. Why did I cross the border when I was already here? My family is still in Tijuana and the rest of the family is in California. And yeah, and something that I like also about those stories, how he was saying how they could, you know, they could see their extended, their cousins and play right there where the wall is now. Yeah. And now that is, know that is impossible that it's going to happen in these days.
Yeah, yeah. On the day that we went and saw the wall, he talked about, I think his grandmother mm-hmm. lived right near the border and yes. like the cousins would all get together and they would want to play soccer and they would want a field. And so they would go and there was a field on the U.S. side so they could just walk over there and play. And then go back to grandma's house in Tijuana. And
Do not try to do that nowadays.
Right.
Will be
right. And now there's a 30-foot wall
yeah.
there. Right. But yeah, just the way that like it didn't used to be so harsh and mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. much separation.
Yes.
That it used to be a lot more
And it was open. More a family. You know, it was mm-hmm. just, yeah. let's get together. Families being together. Now it's families being separated.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really interesting angle to when, you know, talking mm-hmm. about how mm-hmm. you used to be able to go back and forth and it was not a big deal. And that was the day that we saw, you know, a family where they were divided, literally divided mm-hmm. by the border wall, mm-hmm. trying to say hello and celebrate a birthday. And
how sad it was and how dangerous. You could feel that for
yeah.
them and for us, even if we weren't part of that situation, that family
yeah.
situation there.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. that was a real... Just everything about him leading that week gave such a great mm-hmm. perspective that I wasn't yes. expecting
yeah.
from the trip. So it really reiterated for me how important those relationships are, right? Like we could have just gone to San Diego and walked and saw the wall mm-hmm. and done these things, but without someone to walk us through that, yes. that we were able to be in relationship with and to hear mm-hmm. his story and his family's stories was so valuable to being able to understand the situation and what it feels like to live and work in that area.
And I think it was God, we know God put us there, mm-hmm. but when I started doing, when I started planning the anti-racism sessions, I always had the vision of doing something and not only limited to reading a book and have the same conversation again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So that was the main goal of this trip. So when I started trying, I didn't know where to go. So I started contacting synods who have
missions,
ministries along the border.
Sure.
And no one replied except Pastor Manuel's synod, which is South Pacifica or something
Sierra
like
that. Pacific,
or Sierra Pacifica.
Maybe.
And it was their accountant who called me back and she recommended Pastor Manuel. So I started talking with him and blah, blah. I think... The reason that any other synod reply was because it has to be him. It has to be St. Andrews
yeah.
for us, mm-hmm. for Trinity, for the small group of Trinity. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that we didn't get to talk too much about when we were doing the sermon with Pastor Patrick was about St. Andrews itself and mm-hmm. and the ways that we were able to learn from that congregation. I would love to talk about that and hear Lita Say talk about that too, just about their kind of evolution. Because when you go to this, I mean, we went to Sunday worship at this ELCA Lutheran congregation, and in worship, it felt I would say, you know, similar to any other Lutheran congregation I've been to. Yeah. Very white, mm-hmm. you know, middle class, like felt really, you know, there were little things that stuck out to me. I was like, oh, this is really wonderful. Like they had a great like disability ministry and, you know, several members in wheelchairs that were able to fully participate and developmental disabilities that were able to fully participate.
Yeah.
That kind of stuck out to me. But otherwise, you know, just felt like any other congregation. But there were ways that they had found to engage with their community that really stuck out and felt like ways for us to learn from them. Pastor Manuel talked about when he first took the call there, he was very explicit about, yes, I will take this call and I would love to be here. And also, I am going to take the youth to Tijuana. And we're going to do mission work across the border because they need to learn that it's not just a dangerous place that they should be scared of. And so he came in with this really intentional vision of engaging in the community in a different and new way for them. And so he talked about how that was kind of the first step and how they've taken all these other steps along the way to get to where they are now. I don't know if you want to talk about like some of the ways that they're engaged now, or some of the things that they're doing, like the family.
So they have a Haitian family who was literally dropped off there somewhere in the middle of the night. This family is, they are applying to the refugee or asylum. Immigration status. And they've been living there for a couple months. And sure, the congregation has welcomed them. Is a couple with a little baby, beautiful boy. And there is another guy, he's a single man, young man. And they've been there and the church provide the food and the place for them to stay. And they are waiting for this process that is taking longer than expected. And the congregation has been open to have these people from a different culture, a different language, with a unstable immigration status, and they are okay with that. There is not, you know, it's not perfect. It's not at the 100% because they can still hear comments like, oh, why these illegals are here when they are not illegal, and that's a very disrespectful and racist way of referring to a person that is in this situation. But they've been there. I mean, the congregation has survived. Nothing has been lost. You know, if some people can think about that. It's just so normal in their lives. It looks like, so, oh, yes, part of our congregation life is having these Haitian families. And we as congregation providing for them and being church for them.
And I think for them, it started, this is maybe the second or third family that has been living there, and it started during COVID when the church was shut down, and so somehow they heard that there were, you know, some people who needed a place to live, you know, short, medium term, and they were like, well, we have an empty building, so they could use our space.
Yeah.
And then it has just continued. So that was, I think, how they got dropped off, was that another church had actually heard that St. Andrew's was had a place for some people to stay. And so they just dropped them off there. We're like, here you go, you deal with it.
That's such a, I mean, for us here, like that's such a radical concept. And cause you guys also talked about, in your sermon with Pastor Patrick, there's a gentleman living like in the shed or something. Yeah. And he has schizophrenia. And how, like, that would, I feel like something like that would not even be considered here at Trinity.
No, we know. And just want to say something before Heather goes in depth of this men's story. It is radical, but why is it radical for us?
Right.
Because we, so many things to say about that, but we don't have time. And it's not, it should not be radical. It should be something that is like, normalize is just ministry is just the mission of church. But no. So Heather, sorry.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, yes, there's a man with you know, pretty severe mental health issues who all he needed was shelter. And so they provided him with that without trying to push him to get services that he wasn't interested in.
Right.
So that was just interesting to see how they were meeting his needs where he was at mm-hmm. without like pushing their own desires onto him.
Yeah.
And saying like, oh no, you need, you know, that's not right that you are living in a shed or whatever. But just to say like, oh, this is what you need. Okay. We can provide this. What, you know, there's a partnership here.
Right.
But yeah, that was one of those things, you know, seeing how they were able to accompany this Haitian family and series of families, mm-hmm. how they were able to accompany this man who needed just shelter. That was one of those things that I felt like we could bring back to Trinity and say, okay, what are the ways that we can use the resources that we have here, whether it's, you know, an empty building during COVID or a shed or, you know, whatever, like, what do we have right. here where we just need to listen to what God is asking us, you know, yeah. like mm-hmm. when a family yeah. gets dropped off on your church's front door,
right.
You know, how is that an opportunity? You know, how is God at work in that saying mm-hmm. like, what, how can you, you know, where are you leading us?
Right.
So I just think about how does that translate to Trinity? Like, what are the ways that are maybe right in front of our face mm-hmm. that are easy for us to say like, oh, well, you could call Western Dairyland and here we'll give you the phone number. So maybe we'll give you a ride there and they can help you figure it out. But what are the ways that might be right in front of our face where we can say, well, what are the things that we have here that we can share, whether it's space in our building or other things.
Right.
It just felt like a whole like paradigm shift for that congregation to be able to get to the point of being able to accommodate these folks who needed maybe a different kind of way to meet their needs. Mm-hmm. That like, what are the ways that we need to shift our paradigm or that we have the opportunity to shift our thinking in like, okay, what is God doing here? Where is God leading us? What opportunities are there for us to minister to our neighborhood in ways that don't come from us, but that come from the neighborhood's needs?
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that it's an interesting way to think about that.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like I'm talking in circles, so feel free to translate that.
No, but I feel like, as you're talking about that, I feel like we're meeting some of that need with Lita Say being here and her neighbor-to-neighbor ministry. Like, that to me in the Eau Claire area was like a very needed thing. And now that we're able to have that, like, it's having you here is coming. It's, how do I phrase this?
But it has to be beyond that.
Oh yeah.
Point.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
not just the presence.
Oh, for sure.
Especially when the presence is not always welcome with all the right. layers.
Right.
Right. Of the layers of being, mm-hmm. being mm-hmm. the layers right. of identity. It is not just like, oh, we have someone or we do this and it's just good for the picture of we can check the box in mm-hmm. the, you know, do you have someone who is not white with you? Yes. One. Okay, good. We are good. It's right? way more than
oh,
that.
Yeah. Oh,
it
yeah.
It includes the actual inclusion and welcoming and things so basic and so maybe silly like an accent.
Right.
My accent is not welcome here.
No.
And I won't say anything different. It's not welcome.
It's not.
Even when people is doing nice comments and that, the accent is a problem here
mm-hmm.
for Trinity Lutheran Church congregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
So it is not only, let's have someone. We need mm-hmm. to know that we have to accept this person. And it's not me, it could mm-hmm. be whoever, with mm-hmm. everything else.
Right.
Other than that, otherwise it's just double moral. To say it
mm-hmm.
nice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about the ways that that St. Andrews in San Diego had to really buy in to the idea of hosting a family living there.
Right.
Right? Like, that congregation had to do some work and some introspection and saying, exactly. like, is this something that we want to support? And what are the ways that that's going to look? And what are the ways that Trinity can do that and can have some introspection and say like, yes, we want to reach out to the Hispanic community. Yes, right. We want to do these things. What are the ways that we need to change mm-hmm. in order mm-hmm. to accommodate or to welcome, you know, things that we haven't done in the past? Mm-hmm. You know, what are the ways mm-hmm. that we need to change? You know, do we need to practice listening to someone speak with an accent so that we can understand it more? Or, right. you know.
Because, yeah, it's like the congregation is expecting others to change and accommodate to them and adapt to them so they mm-hmm. don't have to do anything. So it's mm-hmm. more, it's easier and it's passive. There is not an active change, an active relationship there. And talking about San Andrews and this Haitian family, there is a relationship. It's not just the, oh yeah, we have these people, these black people here, yay. No, they have conversations. They know mm-hmm. about what is going on with them. So it's beyond, it's when we talk about inclusion, it's more complex than mm-hmm. only having a presence mm-hmm. just for right. the picture.
Right.
Other mm-hmm. than that, if we think that is what is required or the only thing that is needed, we are way behind mm-hmm. in what we say we are doing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the name of God, of course.
I'm going to theologize this a little bit.
Ooh, yes, please.
It sounds like perhaps a lot of Anglo churches in the Midwest, kind of the cradle of Lutheranism in this country, have this perception that we have, I say we because I'm Anglo, the best understanding of the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. And it's everyone else's responsibility mm-hmm. to join in mm-hmm. when perhaps we don't. Maybe a glimpse, a glimmer, mm-hmm, right. but we are called to learn from our neighbors.
Right.
And this might be shocking to some listeners, but if you were to look at the populations of where Christianity is thriving and growing, mm-hmm. it is a religion of the Southern Hemisphere yes. of the
yes.
world.
Yes.
Like the largest Lutheran church, like, is in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. that might be shocking, but there are more Lutherans in Ethiopia than in the United States.
Yes.
Mm. Wow. Mm-hmm. So how might we need to have, and this is bringing in some stuff my kids are learning in school, but how can we have a growth mindset towards these things and learn from other people mm-hmm. instead of being stuck
right.
in mm-hmm. our way, in our traditions? Mm-hmm. We can value traditions, but when we idolize them to the point of mm. not seeing God's presence in our neighbor, woof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is when we create monuments and idols of our perceptions. Mm-hmm. 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 A beautiful sculpture, if you want to go see it, it's at St. James the Greater. I think that's the Catholic congregation mm-hmm. on the northwest side of town in Eau Claire. But they have a resurrected Jesus sleeping on a bench mm-hmm. as a homeless person. And it's a shocking thing. My wife was kind of taken aback when she took kids there for some sort of play thing in their big yard.
Yeah.
She was taken aback, like, oh, is that a homeless person? And she's like, oh, no, that's a sculpture. Then she was intrigued by it. But it's just a visual reminder, wow, how are our lenses and our barriers blocking us seeing God in our neighbors
yeah.
and valuing that and right. saying, I don't right. have all of my stuff together.
Right.
I need to learn from others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is a lot of work to do to get to that point. We are not even close. Even if we, and I'm saying we as synod, we are really behind.
Yeah. So I think that was one of the big takeaways from this trip to San Diego was to bring it back to
mm-hmm.
to my conversation. Right.
But one of the big takeaways I think was that it was a great opportunity for me as a white person to like decentralize myself and my experience mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. to be able to see another experience that looked different, you know, but besides St. Andrews, you know, going to Chicano Park where they were celebrating the mm-hmm. Mexican American heritage. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the other places that we went, being able to see ways that that God's people are living, and that we can see God in our neighbor in a different way. And it you know, I'm used to being in the upper Midwest where most people look and act like me. And so it's easy for me to have this very narrow lens of, you know, what God looks like. Right. And so this trip was a great way for me to kind of expand that vision of what the kingdom of God looks like, and how we respond to each other. And so that felt like a big takeaway for me, was just expanding that lens that Pastor Tom was talking about.
Yeah. And how is it possible to do that? It just requires willingness and openness and being in that level of humbleness to see that it is possible. Because when I talk about, for example, you know, I go to different churches, mm-hmm. and because of my duality of call with the Synod and Trinity, and when I try to tell them, okay, you guys need to open to the Hispanic people, and it's like, oh, yes, sure, but we cannot have the bulletin in Spanish. It's like, what? it's like, we put the barriers ourselves. Maybe there is a possibility, but we just block ourselves for doing this. And I think San Andreas gave us that, hey, here it is. It is possible. Someone is doing it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, someone can say, oh, San Diego is, you know, the whole California is so diverse, so culturally diverse, and mm-hmm. so it's easier for them. No, here in the club we can do that. In the small congregations of the whole Northwest Synod of Wisconsin, there is a possibility of a real, actual inclusion and diversity, culturally diverse congregations, and not only from the perspective of membership, but also from the perspective of God's mission.
Sure.
And for me, I just need to add this before I forget, is personally, it was the first time in all these years that I've been in this Eau Claire, Chippewa area that I felt I didn't get any microaggressions, I think. I think I got one from someone in San Andreas, but I'm not going to talk about that. But I didn't get any rejection because of my color, because of my accent. Mm-hmm. And even from white people, my accent was just something they are used to. And even if they don't speak Spanish or something, it was fine. I was even able to speak Spanish, but I know that that's because of the geography. But it was good to be there. I wasn't rejected. You know what I mean? I wasn't excluded. I was part of the group, part of the church, part of, you know, the community.
Yeah.
Not like here, not like being here.
Yeah. It was like a beautiful thing to watch that, like, you were able to relax in a different way. Mm-hmm. I can remember going into a store with you and being like, well, how do you know who to speak Spanish to? And like, because so many people spoke Spanish and and had, you know, dark hair
I didn't know. I love to interrupt people, you know that. But I didn't know. I knew my Spanish was going to be welcomed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, Spanish, not even the accent, the Spanish language was going to be welcomed there because where we were. Right. And I just, maybe I made some assumptions, but still no one and I knew someone may look like me, but still speak only English. Mm-hmm. And they could say, no, I'm sorry, I don't speak Spanish. And that is okay. Mm-hmm. But that didn't happen. And no one was shocked.
But it was different. Like for me being, I think our interactions were interesting there because when we're here in Wisconsin, maybe I feel like there are times where I help translate for you or help you find the word that you needed. And when we were there, it felt very flipped because there were times when we were speaking with people who only spoke Spanish. And I was like, Lita, say, come help me. And so it gave us kind of a chance to sometimes flip a little bit in our relationship. And so that was Great and wonderful.
And someone can say, okay, go and move to California. But no, the thing is, we need to change here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin. And something really nice that no one asked me to write down my words of what I'm saying. I didn't have to write my hello, how are you? Because people were good enough to actively listening to my accented words.
So it sounds like this experience was great for all those. Mm-hmm. Do you envision this becoming a regular trip for Trinity or the Synod?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a lot of potential there.
Yeah.
Not only in terms of infrastructure, but in terms of mission, there is a lot that the whole Synod and the whole Trinity Lutheran Church can take advantage of. And we can learn. And we can use that what we learned there to for our own reality.
Yeah, and I think for some, you know, whether it's with Trinity or with the Synod, I think a lot of people have a view of a mission trip as going and, you know, building something, like a habitat thing like you did, Katie.
Yeah.
And so I think it will take some education to kind of change that idea of, because we didn't go and we didn't build anything. We didn't go to do something specific. We went to learn and to get to expand our vision, right, of what we can do and what ministry looks like. And so I think that will take some work to kind of help people understand that, no, this is also a mission trip. This is, or, you know, call it something else, but it's a great opportunity for people to kind of expand their vision.
So a trip of deconstruction for some folks.
I love that.
But then the ability to expand your horizons and your viewpoints and be vulnerable enough to be impacted by other people.
I would love to go back again and maybe stay somewhere with air conditioning this time.
How did other folks deal with it? No, I'm just kidding. Well, I think that's about time for us. I thoroughly enjoyed this entire series. Thank you, Deacon Lita Say.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Lita Say, for
thank
being
Thank you for you'll having
have,
me.
You'll have to come back again.
Yeah, I will.
We'll think of more things to talk about.
Deacon Lita Say brought in Bonhoeffer in her sermon yesterday. On Sunday, excuse me. Yes. Super excited for our December series.
About Bonhoeffer.
Yeah.
Pastor Tom is digging into all of his like nerdy books to prep us for a very Bonhoeffer Christmas.
It's going to be great.
It is. Thank you, Pastor Tom. Yes.
Well, again, thank you, Lita Say, for being here. If anybody has any questions for Lita Say, feel free to, you can email her at lidixe@trinity-ec.org. If you have any general questions about the podcast, you can email me, Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at trinity-ec.org. Otherwise, we just really appreciate you listening. And Lita Say and Heather, we really appreciate you guys sharing your stories and your experiences. This has been just lovely.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for letting us talk.
Of course. Of course. All right. We will see you guys in a couple of weeks. We're taking a week off, I think, before our next series. But
so exciting.
It is. It is very exciting.
It had me digging into my old seminary notes.
Good.
For our next series.
Good.
Oh boy. I need to get on board.
Not to turn anyone off with that preview.
All right. Well, until next time, have a wonderful week, day, month, year,
etc.
Yeah.
Hasta luego, amigos.
Adios. Bye, friends. Bye, friends, amigos.